and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We're airing a special week of shows this week. Nicole and I are on vacation, enjoying some much-needed freaking time off before the election season really ramps up. But also, we're moving Undivided into a new podcast studio. However, we're not going to leave you hanging. We've been doing interviews all week on important issues. And I have to say, the interview we have for you today is in the 2.5 years I've been doing Undivided, one of the best ones that we've ever done. And I just really love the subject matter and the passion of the person. So David Leon wears a couple different hats. So he's a comedian. I would say he's kind of a social media influencer, so to speak, but he's using his humor and his influence to try to really raise alarm bells for some of this radical gender ideology that's happening, specifically as it pertains to our children. So David's also a member of the group, the controversial group, as some would label it, Gays Against Groomers. I hope you enjoy our conversation. David, welcome to Undivided.
Hi, thank you so much for having
me. How dare me for waiting so long?
I know, honestly, I was going to write a letter. I've been writing letters of
like
complaint.
USPS? Like yeah. You were going to send it in the mail?
Apparently, you never got them, but I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
Most of the time when I get letters, I am highly skeptical of the contents.
Yeah.
So that would have probably not been read, honestly. So I had an interesting event with you about a month ago. Mm-hmm. So I went down to the Pierce County before their convention. They had sort of a comedy night, I guess, just to loosen things up, the Republican Party, you know, like, let's just bring in some comics. And I was there to introduce Dave Reichert, and you were one of the comics. And the Washington State Democratic Party used your presence to attack Dave Reichert as like a bigoted homophobe.
Yeah.
So remind people what they said, like why they said that him being in the same room as you was so bad.
Oh, God. So, I mean, I was scheduled to do comedy that night in Pierce County, and I wake up to like 10 different messages and emails from people being like, have you seen? You're an extremist now. So I get this email forwarded to me, official email from the Washington State Republican Party, official statewide press release, calling me a dangerous, far right, my favorite part, anti-LGBTQ extremist who spreads misinformation. And the gnarliest part of all this is that they used my full name. I've never used my full name in social media ever. Maybe my super old Facebook that I never use. But since I've started making content, never have put my full name out there. They used my full name, but neglected to add the name of the organization I'm a part of that they're calling anti-LGBT, you know, which is Gays Against Groomers. So it's just so silly. Basically, they've painted me, and with the words they use, what they've excluded, they've intentionally tried to paint me as like some straight, homophobic, transphobic bigot who is just super dangerous to Washington State. And I mean, it's kind of laughable, but also like a little sketchy, like a little dangerous, you know?
Well, it's like they, first of all, in case the bolo tie didn't give it away, you're gay.
What do you mean?
Which,
this just means that style.
Which I'll actually, my friend, State Senator Ron Musall, I guarantee he's going to see this, and he wears a bolo tie everywhere, so he's going to be like, what are you trying to say?
You're going to get another letter.
Your styled bolo tie is much different than how I think, and he's a rancher, you know? I'm assuming you don't have a ranch.
That's very presumptive of you. Yeah. Okay.
This is like Montana sheep. So to see them basically paint you as a dangerous homophobe, as a gay man, using you to attack a political enemy, that had to have really, I mean, you laugh about it, but it had to piss you off.
Oh yeah. I mean, I laughed through all of my trauma. So it was just like, it was jarring because I'm small potatoes. You know what I mean? I don't have a big show. I don't have a huge following. I have no money. I don't have much influence or all. I'm just like, I was gathering signatures for a couple years. You know what I mean? So, and like helping people do that. And, so I'm not a big target for them. So that's what was kind of like, wow, if they're going to go after me and put my full name out there and paint me with such negative, dark, and broad strokes, then it's kind of like the opposite of when they go after like someone like Trump or something, you know, where they're like, oh, he's so powerful. They can go after him. They'll go after anybody. For me, what it showed is that you can't be small enough for them to not go after you, right? Like, they'll go after anybody if they feel like it'll have a chilling effect, you know, and on other voices, especially LGBT voices who disagree with their whole narrative and their regime. And that was the message I got loud and clear from the Washington State Democrats, is that my LGBT voice doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Only the ones that toe the line and want to keep pushing, you know, hormones and surgeries on little kids and teaching over-sexualized material to children in schools, taxpayer-funded. So that was like, okay, I knew that something like this would probably happen at some point if I kept doing what I was doing, but I didn't think it was going to happen so soon, yeah. You know, because I just started a year ago making content, you know?
Yeah, and I want to talk about Gays Against Groomers as an entity, but more broadly, what you spoke to there, that gay people aren't a monolith. And all of them don't support some of the things being pushed by Democrats or supported by Democrats around, like, radical gender identity and, surgical interventions, et cetera. So how big of a contingent do you think it is of, among the gay community that has similar views to you in terms of what you see as sort of a radical movement?
I think it's quite a bit. I think, you know, I think there's silent majorities among a lot of groups, you know, and unfortunately have been silent for probably a little bit too long. So that's what I'm telling everybody. It's like, don't take any pride in being the silent majority, you know, speak the F up, because things are going down very, very quickly and you need to be contributing to pumping the brakes, you know? So I think it's a lot more than what people think. I would say at least 50 to 60% when people actually think about it, because especially as a gay, I know lesbians feel the same way, but I can speak from my experience being a gay person and remembering what it was like growing up as a child. I was a little bit more effeminate. I was more sensitive. I got along more with girls. I was into clothes and things like that. I mean, the only sports I watched were competitive figure skating with my mom, like the Olympics, okay? Because we're Russian, so that's like a big deal to us. So it's like, I know the feeling of feeling dysphoric in your own body. I used to be much heavier too. So I know that it's awkward growing up. I felt feelings of being like, okay, well, maybe life would be easier as a girl. I didn't have the tools or whatever, or the words to describe like actually transitioning or anything like that. But in my childlike mind, I thought that my life would be easier as a girl, especially once you start realizing your attractions too.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, I'm perfectly fine and as, you know, healthy as I can be now. But if I was intervened on as a child because I displayed slightly more feminine characteristics or was attracted, you know, to the same sex, that's so dangerous. That could have so easily been me if I didn't have Russian immigrant parents who would have slapped that crap out of me if I brought it up, you know?
Well, there might be people, I mean, Democrats, who look at that and say, oh, well, they feel bad for you, that you didn't know in your mind. It wasn't normal at the time, or societal, like society didn't talk so much about like transitioning children or all of that. And like, well, they'd say, well, I feel bad for you that you didn't have that avenue.
Right. So they would prefer that I were to go on to like drugs and hormones and deny the reality of my life. But here's the thing. It wasn't like, oh, I wish I could have done it and it was the wrong time. Now, as an adult, as a full-grown man who's experienced, you know, my teens, my 20s, into my 30s now, I'm so happy being a man and being exactly what God made me. I wouldn't want to change any of that. I kind of rediscovered my masculinity in my later 20s, early 30s, because especially with gay men, we're kind of taught to like look to women as like examples and people to like follow, and like the sassiness and all that kind of stuff. And it took a while for me to be comfortable in my masculinity. And I'm so glad that I did that, because I wouldn't want to change anything for the world. So now in my space of an adult, having the, you know, foresight now, or the, you know, hindsight now rather, I wouldn't want to change any of that. So it's not like, oh, I wish I had those tools. No, not at all. It's that I know how susceptible I could have been to that at that age, but it doesn't mean that's what was best for me or what I actually wanted. You don't know what you want when you're that young. I mean, let's be real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I want to dive into that quite a bit, especially on the topic of Gays Against Groomers and their vilification, but just more broadly, I mean, gay people have made a lot of strides even the last 15 years in terms of, you know, marriage equality, and that's a topic we'll discuss as well. Do you feel like some of that is going to be eroded because of how crazy some things have gotten? Like, I feel like, and if correct me if I'm off base, I feel like gay people are being lumped together with like furries, you know, with like the radical transgender ideology, even minor attracted persons, you know, maps. Mm-hmm. I feel like I feel bad for gay people who fought so hard to be treated as equals, and then now they're being lumped in with true lunacy.
Only to be used, basically, mm-hmm. right? And the thing I can compare it to the easiest is it's when we went from being gay to being LGBT. It's the same thing what they did when people went from being black to POC, right? Now you're not just black with all of your history and the oppression and the things that have happened in this country that are true, like undeniable, right? Now you're lumped in with an illegal immigrant who walked over here 30 minutes ago because he has a little bit darker skin. Now he can kind of, they can kind of equate his struggle to yours. And now if you oppose that, what are you also against opposing slavery too? You know, they kind of lump this in because it creates this political group. It does. It creates, it's political consolidation of power. It's true. But what the hell does one have to do with the other at the end of the day, you know? And so what they did, like they said, they took gay and turned it into LGBT. And I mean, you know, gays and lesbians and all that. Then they lumped it then because then it's a political group. It's not a sexuality. You're not a race anymore. You're a political group. You're not just a minority. You're a political tool for them to use and exploit. And it's ridiculous what they consider they could lump under the LGBT umbrella.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, literal fetish and kink. Like, what the heck does that have to do with anything about gay people? It's like gay people took so long to try to, like, not be looked at as just, like, fetishist, kinky freaks type of thing, you know? And, like, took so much time convincing straight people and voters that we just want normal relationships like you. We just want, you know, commitment and monogamy and all of that. And now we're equating, you know, furry rights with trans rights, which have been equated with gay rights. And there's something dangerous in that. I know we'll talk about this later, but I think a lot of well-meaning liberals and maybe even some Republicans believe that the trans movement and the trans rights movement is just a continuation of the gay rights movement. Mm-hmm. So they'd be like, this is like, this would be like opposing, you know, marriage equality or something. Why would I do that? No, because this has to do with children now. This has to do with kids that cannot give informed consent and who in 5 to 10, 15 years are going to be looking around with missing body parts, with their mental health in the gutter, and going to be saying, who is the adult in the room? Yeah. Who let me do this to myself? You know? And that's what I'm scared of. I'm scared of 10 years from now, people asking, you know, where the hell were you when this was going on and what did you do? And me not having enough of an answer because I feel like it's something I can speak to from experience and just from knowing what's right. You know, we know that it's like been slipping so fast and so hard that it's time we kind of pause and look around, no matter how much empathy has been lumped in with the movement we're trying to oppose. It's false.
Yeah, fake empathy. Mm-hmm. And you made an important distinction there, which is it's involving kids. I want to be clear that if you're a transgender adult doing your thing, I don't genuinely care at all. Like, good for you. You get one life on this planet. Right. As long as you're not hurting other people, you live it how you want to live it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to kids, you make a really important point. Do you think, though, that the mainstream sort of gay community has contributed to this? Because I think about Pride parades in Seattle. You know, it's one of the first things I witnessed after moving here. And there is, you know, floats with people dressed in kink and ball gags and, you know, their asses hanging out with thongs and kids on the side and in the parade. And I'm just thinking, like, that isn't, to me, depicting a fair or accurate representation of any gay person that I know.
Right. And it's sad. I mean, I think a lot of that kink, pride, and fetish type of stuff, it happened because gays were so feeling so repressed about their sexuality in like the 100%. 60s, 70s, all of that. So then they just kind of like double down and they're like, right. This is us now. Look at this dildo. Great. Thank you so much for the representation. I love it. So obviously they've contributed to it, even in very much so in the mainstream. It's become mainstream. Like a show that's hugely popular is RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
I used to be a super fan of it. I still watch some of the seasons and episodes and I follow some of it. The politics are so overbearing, though. I mean, they take, especially during election years, they'll take a full 5 minutes out of the episode to tell people to go register, go to this site, vote. They have a huge young audience. Their audience is mainly like 12 to 18 year olds, you know? So, yes, the mainstream gay community has absolutely had something to do with this. You know, now it's kind of like people are waking up because they're realizing, wow, that could have been me. Or B, they're seeing stories of detransitioners. see, they have nieces or little brothers or nephews themselves. So when it's outside of just like this political idea and yes, rights and humanity, and you think about someone you love being exposed to mm-hmm. something sexually explicit, then it can kind of click in your mind a little different, you know? Then you're like, wait, I don't care what identity group I'm a part of. This is wrong, you know? And that's what's the most disgusting about it, is the LGBT movement has been used and the identity has been used as a shield and a sword whenever it's politically expedient.
And it's also been, that has been kind of propped up and helped by all these other institutions. Like, I have genuine fears that this conversation will be taken off YouTube or taken off Facebook because, you know, people get strikes and warnings and demonetization for all of those things. So it's this whole system that works to keep down these sorts of just really reasonable conversations. Like, we're not trying to vilify anyone. No. We're not trying to hate anyone. But the fact that we can't have a conversation without, like, if I got deplatformed from YouTube and Facebook, that's my whole career.
Right.
That's how I provide for my family. And it's like, well, I have to put that on the line to like have you on to have a totally practical conversation. So that, all that stuff has to change. Like Chloe, I think her name is Chloe.
Chloe Cole, yeah.
Yeah, who's this really famous detransitioner now. I think she was from Florida, maybe. Does that sound right? And she gets vilified by the left. She gets, you know, conversations with her deplatformed. It's like, wait, she went through it. She has actual firsthand knowledge. So how do we get past that? I mean, that the vilification of these types of conversations.
I mean, that is a great question, because I've had my TikTok account deleted fully, you know, as
you don't have it anymore.
My oldest, this is my second one that I have now. So last summer, as my video was going viral, like 2.3 million views, I woke up the next morning and everything was deleted. Everything was gone.
My gosh.
No appeal, nothing, because I was talking about gender ideology.
You only get one retirement. Do not risk it, especially in 2024 with a crazy presidential election, global unrest, unpredictable markets. You've worked too hard for your retirement. Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in managing risk. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach and his team at Bulwark. He also hosts the Know Your Risk radio podcast. The review is just a good way to see if you're overexposed to risk. In fact, there's no obligation. They don't even let you invest with them at your first meeting. So whether you become a client or not, I can assure you, you'll leave much more informed about the risks to your retirement. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Check out the grand opening of Natchez RV Resort Phase 2, May 18th and May 19th. The Phase 2 grand opening weekend features 21 extra large RV lots with water, power, sewer, and grand opening pricing starting at only $79,900. Natchez RV Resort has year-round family fun, fishing, hunting, snow skiing, golf, river rafting, outstanding wine tasting, and more. You can enjoy the brand new 4,300 square foot clubhouse with a gourmet kitchen, great room, fitness center, the swimming pool and hot tub are coming soon. Natchez RV Resort Phase 1 sold out quickly, so make sure to reserve your showing for the grand opening weekend, May 18th and 19th. 800-422-6009 or NatchezRVResort.com.
With people policing each other and vilifying anyone that steps out of line. A really good example of that is on Reddit, there's the D-Trans Reddit group. It, you know, if they said it's so rare, I think it has like 100,000 members, okay, or something like that. And you'll see posts of people being so careful, qualifying all their statements, being like, I support the trans movement. I think young people should be able to get hormones, blah, blah, blah. I'm currently going through, I just had my surgery, but I am getting complications. It really hurts. It doesn't look like what they said it was going to look like. There's a weird smell, all these things, right? And there will be so many comments underneath their statement saying, you know, it's really dangerous for you to be spreading things like this because it's going to be picked up on by the right and it's going to discourage people from going down this group.
Wow.
And she wasn't even, she was so on their side. And the policing is so intense that you can't apply any sort of nuance or criticism at all. They are impervious to it. So that makes you wonder what is, why? Why is it so such an important thing for the regime, it seems, for everyone? I think a big part of it is the mental health comorbidities that go along with having gender dysphoria. It has some of the biggest
suicide.
Yes, suicide, depression, manic episodes, bipolar disorders. I mean, schizophrenia. They're a laundry list of very, very common comorbidities. And I think when you're telling people that might have mental health struggles, or do for sure have mental health struggles, are having a full identity crisis, that you are being targeted, you're being genocided, these people hate you, they're scared of you, they're just backwards, that can encourage some very unhinged behavior. That encourages those things like death threats, which I'm sure we've all gotten. It encourages people trying to get you fired from your job, deplatforming you, doxing you with your name and address. So it, and I think the left kind of knows that too.
Yes.
You know what
yes.
I mean? Because I mean, Biden multiple times has come out and said, you know, we support our trans youth. The most important thing you can do, verbatim what he said, is the most important thing you can do as a parent of a trans child is affirm them. Mm-hmm. Is affirm
the
them.
The president of the United States.
The president of the United States said that. And what was that, 1 year, 21 or 22, when one of the only two interviews Biden took was with Dylan Mulvaney?
Yeah.
Right? That's an insult to actual trans women, you know, because they're like, he's been trans for 5.5 minutes and he yeah. gets to go talk to the president yeah. about trans issues. So you're right, where there's kind of built this ethos, but also institutional power that's all kind of safeguarding from any sort of criticisms and any sort of like narrative deviation
right.
when people think about this, that people are just tight-lipped and they're scared of saying anything because they're so heavily policed. So the vilification will only go away if we keep bringing up humanizing stories. That's what I always say with the right, is we got to get better at telling emotional stories and stories from the heart, because they'll be like, you know, this child wants to kill themselves and blah, blah, blah. And we're like, yeah. well, the last quarter's facts and figures. If you look at this graph, yeah. it's like, no, you've already lost them.
Yeah. But they even make up stuff like that, though. I mean, there was the junior high student in the Midwest who got, you know, beat to death in a bathroom or something because they were trans.
God.
And then even the president put out a statement about it.
Like that.
And when he hadn't spoke out about a slew of other things going on.
Yeah.
And it turned out that, no, this, I don't know if it was a biological girl, had killed herself. There was some evidence of sexual trauma and assault in her life.
Yep.
Totally different story.
Yeah.
So it's like they'll make up the, and they use it as a Trump card.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, during the debate over 5599, which was the, hey, we'll let your kids run away to a shelter and not tell you where they are bill, they kept saying, we have to do it because otherwise kids will kill themselves.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's emotional blackmail.
Like, whoa. Oh, that's, God, that's a good phrase.
It
I
is.
Love that. That's exactly what it is. It's like, well, I don't want kids to kill themselves, so do I have to support this?
And that's every parent's
right.
worst fear.
Yes.
Like, a parent could not imagine a worse situation than their child ending their own life.
Yeah.
You know, the parent will blame themselves forever. It is such a powerful mm-hmm. manipulation tool. And there was actually a really great Dr. Phil special about this. He's been speaking out about
yes,
this.
How yes.
saying that is completely abusive. Doctors have basically relinquished their responsibilities for not doing any harm and for actually pursuing the treatment and medication that the child needs, if any. You know, I mean, like psychological medication, maybe, you know, not hormones. But it's scary because there's billions to be made in this industry
yeah.
now. So if you have some loose morals and you want to make some quick money and mask it in virtue and be completely insulated from criticism or repercussions, mind you, this is so experimental. Most people have to sign waivers saying they won't sue or do anything because it's completely experimental. They won't
yeah.
be, they have to sign away their rights to make sure they have a good outcome. I mean, it's really, really unhinged. And I agree with people when they say this is like the largest medical scandal we've had in the last 100
yeah.
years, besides maybe the one that was like 4 years ago.
And I want to, COVID. I was like, what was that? COVID. I'll share something for the first time I've never shared. I went on Timcast. So I was invited to be a guest on Timcast, which is one of the most watched podcasts in the world. You know, traveled all the way to the DC suburbs to do it. And it was really fascinating because this is a guy with millions of viewers, right? And he'll say, he's not afraid of controversy.
Oh, yeah.
He was afraid of this because of the demonetization issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're making millions on their YouTube, right? And so we had got done and some trans issues came up. And at the end, they were debating amongst themselves whether off air, whether they needed to take that episode down preemptively because someone had said something questioning transgender issues. And if they got three strikes, that was it.
That's it.
And so even Tim Pool, even Timcast had to consider whether to take a full episode of the show down over not even controversial statements. I don't think they did ultimately, but that shows the depths of fear.
Yes.
That social media, the government, right? Because if you're, again, if that's your, and that's why you and I, and you said in this interview, reasonable people, like, you just have to speak out about it. Mm-hmm. But losing your livelihood is a huge doxing, going to your job. Most people aren't willing to put that on the line to speak out against those things.
And you can hardly blame them. I mean, the economy's 100%. In the trash, you know, all of that. And if they're going to go after someone like me who's never hid his sexuality and call me anti-gay, homophobic, transphobic, dangerous, mm-hmm. far-right extremist, equate me to the Proud Boys, all of these things, then what straight person stands a chance?
You know what I mean? 100%.
Like, what's, like, straight people are going to be looking at that like, wow, because believe me, I get messages, comments every single day from parents being like, thank you so much for speaking out. We appreciate you so much. I can't say this because I get called transphobic. I'm like, sis, baby, me too.
Okay, yeah, like, let's do it together.
They don't care. They don't care what your identity is. No. If you don't toe the line, they're going to demonize you and practically defame you because they have the power to do that. And they won't be criticized for that. And then I get called, you know, all of these names and get banned and deleted and multiple strikes on all my accounts because I'm so careful with how mm-hmm. I speak because I know how this game works now. And it's still, all it takes is a couple people that are unhinged and don't want to hear an opposing opinion.
Yeah.
Just mass report you a few times. And that's enough. Cause they're going to be like, do we err on the side of, or do we risk, you know, pissing off these 20 unhinged leftist activist types.
Who have no job and the time to report.
Exactly. Or do we just like demonetize or delete this one, you know, loudmouth gay? Mm-hmm. Well, let's get rid of the gay. So now I'm trying, you know, Ari actually gave me a good idea that I need to flip it around on them because it's like they are silencing a gay voice. Mm-hmm. This is a little homophobic, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Okay, because it's an important story to share with people. If you don't want kids making mistakes and you don't want kids going down medicalization paths, I think it's a completely fair thing to discuss considering the numbers of detransitioners are on the rise.
Yeah.
So it's a little homophobic, I would say, silencing my voice.
So would you say the Washington State Democratic Party's acting a little homophobic?
I will say the Washington State Democrats are homophobic.
Oh, good. I have been urging you guys to take the First Mark challenge. Look, we all need insurance, right? Why not have someone handle your insurance needs for you for free, making sure that every year you have the best rate, that you have insurance to cover what's happening in your life? Casey in Covington took the First Mark challenge. He said, I want to thank you for telling us to check out First Mark. I did the First Mark challenge a couple weeks ago after receiving a ridiculous renewal statement from my insurance. We made the switch to policies with First Mark and walked away with slightly better homeowners insurance for the same price, nearly down to the dollar, and they managed to save us 37% off our auto quote for the same coverage. He said, right now, every dollar counts. I could not agree more. So take some time, schedule time to take the First Mark challenge today. I promise you, you will not regret it. And the best part is, you never pay them a dime for their services. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com, they work for you. It's almost summer. If you're not looking and feeling your best, I have the perfect plan for you. It's called the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic Program. I lost almost 40 pounds in the program. I've kept it off for more than a year, and I lost 30 pounds of that in the first 2 months. So heck, if you begin the program now, you could be looking and feeling a lot better in just a month or two with plenty of time for summer. So do what I did and what so many others have done. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. The program isn't magic, but I promise if you stick to it like most patients, you could lose 20 to 30 pounds in about a month or two. Will the Fed drop interest rates or not? That is the question for a lot of home sellers right now. But as we await that decision, and a lot of it will frankly have to do with an election year and how much pressure the president is putting on the Fed to drop interest rates, there's still stuff you can do to get your home ready for the market. Go to sellwithwes.com. Start by asking Wes for a free market analysis. You can even plug your address in and see how much your home is worth using their home value calculator. It might be worth more than you think. And talk to Wes about their listing boost concierge service. So what that means is if you need some cosmetic upgrades to your home, they can come in, they can manage those projects, they can even help pay for those upgrades up front. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. The state party has also called Dave Reichert a homophobe, and I'm curious what your genuine opinion is on this. He said at a Pierce County event, "I believe marriage is between a man and a woman." I wish he wouldn't have said it. Honestly, sure. You just take that, you lock, you swallow the key, you just lock that right up. But does that bother you?
No, actually it doesn't. What bothers me about it is that he probably should have been a little smarter than to vocalize that out loud. You know, I am not, listen, this is America. You can believe whatever you want. You know, he didn't go out and say, "I'm going to go out and revoke marriage equality." I'm pretty sure he just put out a statement saying he would never do that.
Yeah.
Right. Is this man not allowed to have deeply held religious or spiritual beliefs that don't align with the Democrats or don't align with, like, is he not allowed to, are we not allowed to actually believe things with our full heart? Even if we treat everybody the same and we're still, you know, decent humans to them, absolutely. Yeah. Most of my family would probably agree with that. Listen, you know, and when I was in a little bit of a toxic engagement last year, I kind of wish they had repealed gay marriage in America so I didn't have to go through with it, all right?
Too funny.
But no, like, low key, I was like, really, abortion? Could you guys go for gay marriage? Damn it. I don't want to have to end this.
Oh, my God. That's too funny.
But I'm like, you know what? Believe what you believe. I think that it's only fair that you govern fairly and for everybody.
Yeah.
Your beliefs, your personal, deeply held faith or belief or religious, you know, dogmas or anything like that, those are yours. Yeah. And I'm not going to judge you for them. I myself am Christian. I know that's like crazy for some people to imagine, but I would never judge somebody for that. I do think you have to govern for everybody, though, for sure. But I would, my only critique of that is that, like, you know, keep it to yourself, or at least say it at an event where you're not being recorded. Yeah. I mean, come on, you know.
Unforced error, for sure. And it's not like we didn't know that was his opinion. He's a Christian man. He's talked about that a lot. And it's just sort of like, when I saw it, I was like, why? Now you gave, you know, Bob his cheapest campaign trick that there could ever be. So let's talk about gays against groomers.
Yeah.
So this has become this firebrand nationally. And it's not just the state Democrats who say that it's like a hate group, an extremist group. So what characterize your membership in it? Is it just a loose sort of like, I'm going to be gays against groomers?
So yeah, last year I was asked to join the organization from their previous Washington State chapter leader, who's now moved on to Florida, and we have a new leader now. But yeah, I was asked to join the organization, and then I started making content for them, and it started doing fairly well. And it's funny because I've always had all these, you know, ask any of my friends, they're like, "David, please shut up about politics. Like, stop, you know?" So, like, making content has, like, given me an avenue to, like, not talk about politics with my friends now, you know? So I think that's a benefit. But I was hugely impressed with what Jamie Michelle, the founder of Gays Against Groomers, has created in less than, at that point, it was less than 2 years. It was about a year and a half. And it's just so important, and it's a twofold reason for the organization. Yes, it's to protect children, to protect girls' sports, protect the kids that are being targeted ideologically, and not just, you know, medically and stuff. You know, there are dangers in socially transitioning as well. But another big reason, and I think the actual animating reason for Gays Against Groomers, is to draw a clear, distinct line between regular gay, lesbians, bisexual, or trans people and the LGBTQ ideologues. That, like what we talked about earlier, between your sexuality and your ideology, right? So we are clearly on the sexuality front. This is it. This is about our attraction. It's not about our politics and everything else. And we're not all together in this, in the sense that what does a married, tax-paying 45-year-old gay man have to do with a 17-year-old genderqueer Marxist revolutionary? You know what I mean?
Yeah, very little.
Very, very little, besides the acronym, you know? And that's why the acronym is so powerful, too. It's such a powerful tool for them, because it is politically consolidating power, you know? It's like the Rainbow Coalition, like Obama did a second term.
Well, what would you take out of that, if you could? So LGBTQIA+.
I would stop it at T, basically. T. Okay. And then I would put an and between the B and the T. So it's LGB and T, because if we're being very real, trans doesn't even have to do much with gay, lesbians, and bisexuals, right?
Correct.
It's your gender identity versus your attraction or your sexuality or orientation, whatever you want to call it. I know like two out of three of those are considered taboo now to say. Yeah. So yeah, it's a completely different thing. And especially the radical gender activists need to attach themselves to the gay rights movement and to the larger gay group. So many more people have gay friends than they do trans friends, right? That's just by the numbers, obviously. So they're going to equate being like, well, I'm not, you know, homophobic. I'm not, you know, mm-hmm. bigoted or anything. Of course, I'm going to support these poor trans babies. Like, yes, yeah. give them all the medication they need. So there's like this false equivalence between the two and this false kind of like tie. And it's ironic because it's kind of like almost everything they say is the opposite. You'll see this a lot online is, you know, POC trans women gave gay men their rights, basically. Like, you know, Marsha P. Johnson threw the first brick at Stonewall. No. A, it was like a lesbian. And B, Marsha P. Johnson wasn't even identified as trans. She identified as a drag queen. But we don't have to get into all of that. But it's actually the inverse, because gays are the ones that normalized even alternate yeah. sexual identities to begin with, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we had this political group, this political coalition, you know? And then you guys tapped into that to push forth this other very radical gender yeah. agenda, you yeah. know?
They're piggybacking off the struggle of yes. generations of gay people.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like you said, and I think you were sort of joking, but I do think gay people who have lived through the struggle of acceptance probably are more prone to sympathize with a transgender child or a child that's going through some confusion about their gender.
Sure.
But when it's this sort of forced on, oh no, we will, and you will accept yes. whatever we want to do. It's like, okay, I was going to be kind of on your side yeah. and helping you work through this, but now I'm like, no thanks.
Until you're like yeah. choking me out and being like, celebrate yes. me. You
know? 100%.
Ma'am.
Yeah.
It's ma'am.
Yeah. So, no, don't even get me started on the, I have really gone through a phase on the pronouns.
Uh-huh.
So when I was on TV, a mayoral candidate, Nikita Oliver, who'd run for city council and then decided to go by they, them, and run for mayor. And so all of a sudden, this candidate who I'd referred to as her or she for all these years, like, demanded to be called they, them on TV. And I'm like, it's not grammatically correct. I refused to do it on TV, so I would just say Nikita Oliver.
Yeah.
And it was just this weird. And so, you know, the years after that, I was like, you know, look, if it's a he, she, he, him, I'll do it. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to say your name.
Yeah.
You tell me your name. I'll use your name. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I'm not doing zay, zem, zay, no. zare. You know,
you
I'm not doing
it. Simplify it. Honestly, it makes you dumb. In conversation, it literally makes you dumb. And I'm speaking from personal experience. When I was doing a podcast about Dylan Mulvaney, yeah. and I'm not intentionally trying to, you know, insult or anything like that. And I definitely misgendered him a few times. But I, like, kept including catching myself. I didn't even mean to.
Yeah.
So Dylan, definitely misgendered Dylan a few times. And what I realized that it made me do is it made me stop my train of thought completely. It made me think about what I'm about to say and have like a little glitch. It literally makes us dumber. It makes speaking to each other more difficult.
Yeah.
It makes us self-police our own language. And even if it's not like we're policing what we're saying, we're like policing how we're saying it. And it's just, it makes us less likely to speak out or talk or any of that. And we already have so much of that. Yeah. We already have so much of people being scared to speak out about anything. And now people are going to be double thinking every word they're right. about to say. It literally makes you slower. So I'm not a huge fan of that. But what I've always told people is that I do have trans friends, I'm going to use the pronouns that they present as mm-hmm. and what they would like, out of respect, because I'm not an ass, you know what I yeah. mean? Like, I'm going to be kind. I'm not the person that's going to like go out of my way to be like, oh, you're a dude, you're never going to be a woman. That's counterproductive, yeah. you know, and I think that actually hurts our movement a lot more than it helps. It might get people clicks and it might get people, you know, comments and all yeah. that crap, but I think overall it's actually a negative to our movement, because we need to focus on the actual victims of this ideology, which mm-hmm. are women, girls, and boys.
Yeah. So for instance, just as an example of that, when you say, I'm not going to, you know, say, oh, you're a dude, you'll never be a woman. But there are some people who, I'm sorry, like, for all intents and purposes, like, that is a guy. And yeah. I'll just give you one example. And again, I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, but the public defender in the city of Seattle. Oh.
That is a beautiful, brave woman. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just saying, like, if I had, I mean, I have, I can say this to you. You can say anything to a gay man as a woman. I have huge breasts.
Okay.
I do, okay? I'm blessed. But like, if I were to go into a court of law with that shirt on, with my boobs pressed up to high heaven, with the leather pants and the makeup.
So you're jealous. You're jealous of her is what you're trying to
and
say.
And erect nipples. I'm sorry, but it wouldn't be allowed.
Right.
And so it's literally like, because it's a guy doing it, you can't say anything about it.
And it's clownery. I mean, it's buffoonery. He wore a breastplate with erect nippies, okay?
Like, chose a prosthetic with erect nipples as a public defender in a court of law.
And he had, like, the makeup, like, he looked like Amanda Lepore. I don't know if anyone knows, but it was intense. And that's so, actually a really – sorry, go ahead.
I just want to say, so that's – no, you keep going. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm just like, I don't want to be mean, but how can you not laugh at that?
Oh, I mean, but that's intentional. That's like, you know, the goth kids in middle school walking into class with like black and green in their hair and painted all over and being like, why are you looking at me? It's like, because that's the point. That, like, we're doing, we're using as intended, sir. Yeah. So, yeah, with that whole thing, I think it's really, because that's so clearly a fetish. That is not a trans person. Okay. That is not someone that's experienced gender dysphoria, I do not believe. I think this is a fetishist. It's probably an autogynephile, which is just a man who's attracted to the thought of being a woman. And there's actually, I think her name is Julie, but I'm not sure. There's a doctor who's done a ton of research on this. And she spoke about how before all of this gender ideology madness came about, doctors and researchers essentially divided trans people into two groups. There were the homosexual trans and the heterosexual trans, and it made so much sense to me. So the homosexual trans is kind of like how we all think of trans people. This would be a kid experienced gender dysphoria, very young, always felt like they were born in the wrong body, attracted to the same sex, wanted to be with men, thought life as a woman would be easier, wants to be accepted as a woman, blah, blah, blah. And then they tend to transition. They tend to look more like a woman. They put a lot more into their transition, all of that. Then they start young. The other side of that would be called the heterosexual trans women, which start later in life. It's usually after they retire. They usually already are divorced, married, have kids. They've made their whole life. That's usually start in their 50s or 60s after they retire. And they are sexually aroused at the thought of being a woman, at putting on women's clothes. It's a little bit more of transvestism than it is transsexuality, right? This happens later in life. They don't put much effort into transitioning. They want to make it obvious that they're a man. That's a fetish. And they are very keen on invading women's spaces because it's a part of the fantasy. They want to be in the bathrooms. They want to be in the changing rooms, in the gyms, in the saunas. They want to be there because that's part of their fantasy, you know? And the most important distinction, too, is if you were to take both of these groups and force them to detransition, the former would detransition back and be a gay man so they could still sleep with men. The latter would detransition to a straight man because most of them identify as lesbians because they still want to be with women.
Interesting.
So they're still attracted to women and they want to be in women's spaces, right? So it's kind of this double whammy. And then, I mean, go on any lesbian dating app that's available right now. It's almost impressive how much things have changed. I mean, these guys don't so much as put on some chapstick and be like, yes, I'm a trans lesbian. Please enjoy my, you know, female appendage.
Yeah. Like, I'm probably not going to be going on a lesbian dating app, but I'm just going to take your word for it. Let me ask you about the phrase groomers. The right has been accused of overusing that phrase. What do you consider a groomer to be?
Ooh, this is actually an interesting question for me because I might agree with that statement. A groomer to me is somebody who intentionally is indoctrinating, sexualizing, or preparing, as in grooming, a young person to be something that they wouldn't naturally necessarily come to, or even if they would, accelerating that process, you know? And ideological grooming is just as dangerous. It's not, it's less horrific or more horrific, less horrific than physical, you know, but it's just as pervasive in the mind and long lasting. So I have actually had this conversation with quite a bit of right wingers and people, including within the group gag, that we do need to be more careful with how, when we throw around the word groomer and pedo, because it runs the risk of turning into what the left uses racist, 100%. Right? And then we're going to take all the power away from that word because being a groomer and being a pedo is the worst thing you could be, right? So it's like among the absolute worst. So we don't want to take the power away from that statement. We can't just go around calling everybody at a school board meeting a groomer and a pedophile because they aren't maybe informed enough on the books that they're allowing kids to read. Or, you know, maybe they're just like blissfully ignorant.
Yeah.
Yes, they can be enabling things, and those people deserve that criticism. But I call people groomers that are groomers, you know, and I call people pedophiles that are pedophiles. And I don't like to use those words loosely because I don't want them to, it's not about hurting any of their feelings or protecting them. It's about keeping the integrity and the strength of our movement and the words that we use. So I do think the right has overused the word, frankly. Mm-hmm. I do think that it's important that we make distinctions between the worst of the worst and then people that maybe aren't informed, are misinformed, in denial, or, you know, because otherwise people are going to look at us from the left or from the middle and be like, well, those people just think everyone's a pedophile.
Right.
So it's like, they're crazy too. What am I supposed to, you know? And we have to be better at speaking to the middle and the empathetic, reasonable left, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you made the comparison to racist, because that's how I feel about it. It's like, you call everyone racist. So, I mean, I get called racist by the left every single day.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, that's fine. Like, if you want to call me racist or transphobe or whatever
right.
it is.
Right. So we don't care anymore, right?
Yeah.
So, because it's lost all that weight. So that's what I don't want. I think that's already started to happen a little bit, you know, because it has been used almost a comic amount of time. But it was effective in the beginning. I remember even James Lindsay was pushing it out because it was like, okay, groomer was like our response to okay, boomer, you know?
Yeah.
So, and it was clever and that's cool and all, but I think it's gotten to the point where we just need to be really, really clear and we need to, it's too important. We have too many important elections and important bills and all these things that we need to be focused on, that we need to be able to build coalitions with people that don't agree with us on 60% of things, but agree with us on 10 to 30, you know?
I do feel like, though, public opinion is shifting on the youth transgender craze. You get that sense, too?
Oh, for sure. I mean, even they, you know, banning it in multiple European countries now, under 18, all of that. I mean, most left people tend to think that Europe is so far ahead of us and they're more advanced. And it's like, honestly, our left is more radical than theirs is. We're more radical on abortion, more radical on the trans thing. We're more radical on a lot of these things. They're just a little bit more leftist economically, where it might actually benefit some people, you could say, you know? Whereas we've taken this like hard cultural, ideological leftist position because it's just predominant in our culture. The right has relinquished the culture completely to the left, you know?
Yeah, but I do think it is because people, you know, J.K. Rowling, you know, and all the hate that she's taken, the Harry Potter author, for people who aren't familiar, but if you don't know who that is, I just am disappointed.
Yeah. Go follow her on Twitter.
She will not relent on the, you know, men and women's sports and people like Riley Gaines. And you need to know something. What you're doing is really important.
Oh,
I don't know if you have any days where you question that or think it'd be easier if I didn't do it. You need to genuinely understand how important it is, what you're doing is. I mean, it's going to save lives. It's going to help take our state and, you know, our corner of the world down a better path. So you must keep doing it as hard as it is.
I really appreciate
that. As hard
that.
As it is. I know you're a funny guy, but this stuff is deadly serious.
It is.
So if you can change hearts and minds with humor, like,
that's
by
what I
want
to try to do. Yeah, for sure. Because it is so dark. It's such a dark subject matter. Honestly, it's like, if I don't inject some humor into what I'm saying, I will need to watch like 4 Real Housewives episodes back to back afterwards just to like rot my brain out of everything. That's all this negativity. Because it's dark and gross, but I also feel like we just can't be naive. We're in a post-Epstein, post-Weinstein world, post-Nickelodeon world. All this stuff that's come out that we've kind of like internally knew was true. We knew Hollywood was creepy. We knew kids were being abused, all of that. But when it's right in your face, it's undeniable. I don't know if you saw that video of, you know, it was a 15-year-old Ariana Grande with the water bottle and the potato. I mean, this is... Yeah. It's asinine that we are to think that all of this stuff happened in the past and isn't currently happening, right? It's like the same thing with like conspiracies in the CIA and stuff. People admit like, oh my God, they did all this crazy stuff back in the day, but they wouldn't do that
now.
You know?
No, we've got our eye on them.
Oh, exactly.
Man, we could dive into other conspiracies. we could talk for another 2 hours.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, but it is protecting children and making sure that children aren't sexualized. This the fact that that has become controversial is insane. We can't be in that place. I do think it's swinging back because of people like you. So do you have any social media accounts left?
Yeah.
You do? Okay.
I do.
Why don't you get pitch them for people?
So my socials are American David, like American David without the A. The at is the
American.
A. Yeah, American David. It's very clever. So that's on Twitter, it's American David. On Instagram, it's American David. TikTok, it's American David 2.0. And then you can catch some of my content on Gays Against Groomers and New American Empire on Instagram as well. So,
and for anyone else in the gay community who agrees with a lot of what you're saying and just hasn't found the courage or the desire to speak out yet, what would your message be to them?
Oh, gosh. Here I am being targeted by the Washington State Democrats. I'm like, do it. It's great. do it. Honestly, it's going to be tough in the beginning. You're going to lose friends. You're going to lose acquaintances. But honestly, what it'll do is it'll reveal who people are in your life. Because even if they don't agree with you, they should stand by you as a person, if they're family or friends. And if you're speaking from a place of honesty, truth, and not, you know, hate or anything like that, do it. Because as many people as you lose, you will gain an entire new community of people that are willing to support you. And it's too important now. You know, we have to be able to use our voices. Unfortunately, we have to play the identity politics game a little bit and kind of use their weapon against them. So just know your voice does matter. Your LGBT voice does matter, and you can actually make a difference. It won't be easy, but it's worth it.
Well, David, I'll be honest, this is one of the most enjoyable interviews I've ever done on the show in 2.5 years. I mean, there's so much important stuff there, but I love everything you have to say, and I
hope
you keep speaking your truth to power. As
Amen. Yes.
So I know you're jetting after this to go on vacation. So I certainly appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. I'm a huge fan. So
that's my conversation with David Leon. And I just, gosh, again, it's hard for me when you have these issues. As I said to him, is whenever I discuss those topics, I'm worried that YouTube, Facebook will be deplatformed. And so you have to make a decision. Is it worth it or not? And if more people don't decide that's worth it, that's how we lose the battle. And that's how we get to these points of insanity where you're like, oh yeah, go ahead. Have a biological man compete against a woman in sports. Or yeah, let's physically alter a child, you know, in their genitalia and to a point where they can't do anything about it when they're adults and change their mind. It's like, let's just have reasonable conversations like adults about these issues, about some of the challenges, some of the things we're weighing, you know, mental health issues and all of that. Without, you know, we should be able to do that without being labeled extremists. And Nicole, you actually met David a couple times, but you were at the Pierce County event where he was a comic, and there was the fear-mongering from the Washington Democrats saying that Dave Reichert was going to be at the same event as a extremist bigot. And then his jokes weren't even, honestly, most of his jokes were making fun of the Republicans in the room.
Definitely.
Like, you know, it wasn't like any scary, bigoted, and he's gay. He's gay. How can you say he's he's a homophobe?
Leave comedy alone.
Oh my gosh. And also leave comedy alone. It's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's just an interesting guy. And I told him, you know, there that what you're doing is really important. And I want to say that to every single person who's been willing on whatever size platform they have and in any way to speak out about these things, because it is difficult. But it is important, and it does make a difference bit by bit by bit. So I give him a lot of credit for just speaking out against the stuff we know to be true that we've been vilified for.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, we say it often, but people just go along with their day and don't really fight for the things that they believe in and the insanity or against the insanity that's kind of taken over right now. And so I appreciate all of those stepping up to really fight back.
What I worry about is that this insanity and the gender ideology and all that has been allowed to go so far to one extreme, there's always a slingshot effect. Like, I don't want to, for instance, we were talking the other day, numbers show that like the number of religious Hispanic Americans and Black Protestants, for instance, they actually are at a lower rate supporting same-sex marriage. And like same-sex marriage is something I don't want to see rolled back. But you have to wonder why in 2024, even for religious people, are fewer religious people, when you consider Black Protestants and I think Catholic Hispanics. Why are they going backward? Honestly, part of me thinks it's because you've had, like, gay rights has become, oh, rights for, you know, like, oh, surgery on kids and the furries, you know, at the school in Utah. So unfairly, those things shouldn't be bundled together. Mm-hmm. But I think they are being bundled together and one's being used to support the other. And so some people are just like, that's gotten crazy to me. So I'm going to go in the opposite direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I struggle on that one because religion is something that's like deteriorated. It appears to have deteriorated in this country. And I think that's sad for a lot of reasons. But I think that there was this like time frame where it was all working very well. And, you know, you don't judge people.
Right.
That to God or
like
what?
2015 to 2020.
There's a way to interpret things, and we kind of found this like happy place where we could all coexist. And now we've kind of gone so far the other way that people are like, I can't live like this. No. Like, I can't live where men compete as women just because they feel like it.
Yeah. And I think that's what you heard from David is like, as a gay man, he's worried we're going to get bundled in with all these real lunacy efforts and then we're going to.
They already are. Alphabet.
Right. That's what I mean. The alphabet soup and stuff. So anyway.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Nicole, thank you so much. We'll be back with another in-depth interview for you tomorrow. We're going to have on Thurston County Sheriff Derek Sanders, who's found himself in a little bit of controversy in the last few weeks for hiring and then accepting the resignation of a former Tacoma police officer who was acquitted of murder. So he and I will go through the craziness around all of that and the hate he got from both sides. We're also going to talk about some of the public safety challenges facing the state. So we'll see you then. If you have not signed up to become a subscriber to the show already, please do so. You can support us for just $5 a month at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com.